You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
You okay?
Go for it.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today's Monday, it's May 16th, it's 2016. The episode number is 207, that's 207, the 207th episode of Building the Game, a documentary podcast. And today is Monday, May 16th, 2016. You're listening to Rob and Jason.
You are.
Yep, it's happening. Hello again.
Hello again.
Mm-hmm. What's up?
Oh, so much has happened since we last recorded.
Yeah, so much. So much.
Those 5 minutes were...
yeah, it's a big 5 minutes.
Big 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Not much happened. I went up the stairs. I came down the stairs. And here we are. All
here
right.
We are. Good.
Yay.
You saved something to a USB drive.
I did, yeah. Which is good, because otherwise listeners got nothing for the show.
Right.
Got nothing for a show from us. Hey, that might be better than something. I don't know why I was just randomly singing stuff.
Yeah. Hey, I watched I'm in the middle of watching a documentary. I had to stop it when I came over here tonight.
Yeah? What's it about?
It's called Chuck Norris versus Communism. And it's
a documentary?
It's a documentary. It's funny. It's a documentary about Romania during the communist period. When it was under Ceausescu.
Okay.
And the Communist Party there clamped down on everything, right? No anything for anybody.
No anything for you.
Right. Kind of.
So.
I don't know what the Romanian accent probably should be. Anyway. But so.
Isn't
so,
it like, I want to suck your blood, right? That's Transylvania.
That's
Transylvania.
Romania. Is it?
Yeah.
Well,
where else would it be?
That's also a Hollywood version of a Transylvanian
Whatever.
Accent. So I don't know. Man.
It's a vampire, dude. It's not a real thing.
Okay. Anyway, it's a documentary about movies and about bootleg VHS tapes in Romania during the 90s. Late 80s and early 90s, I believe. And so it's about the underground culture and ring of bootleg. Illegal American movies that were dubbed and copied over and over and over again on VHS, and how people would have secret screenings in their homes and charge admission fees, and it's really good. It's really good. I haven't finished yet. I'm looking forward to getting back tonight when we're done and finishing it. Chuck Norris versus Communism, and I think that's a catchy name. There's very little Chuck Norris actually in the film.
It's a catchy name though. Yeah.
But yeah. Right. Chuck Norris there is kind of the stand-in for the American action hero. But it's not... they talk a lot about action movies because those are the sensational ones. But they have clips from, like, When Harry Met Sally in it and just all kinds of stuff.
All in Romanian?
Well, it's just the... That's part of the story, actually, is where they interview the woman who narrates them or dubs over them.
Oh.
And she kind of tells the story of dodging secret police while going to her secret night job of dubbing over American VHS tapes. It's really good.
Why is it such a big illegal thing? Why do the people in Romania care if they're
government? The government, you know, they didn't want any outside influences to undermine
their authority.
Oh, that's
why. Okay, it's not because they're stealing; it's because they don't want that darn American influence. That makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah,
yeah. They said they went from two channels when the Communist Party took over. They had two channels on their national television that had 20 hours of programming a day on each channel, down to one channel with 4 hours a day. Of propaganda. And that was it. That was all that they could view legally on TV.
That's terrible.
Yes. It was objectively terrible.
Where is Dracula when you need him, man?
Well, he was on those crappy overdubbed VHS tapes that were falling apart on bootleg VCRs that people bought illegally. They would spend like 2 months' salary, 2 months' wage. No, I'm sorry, more like 6 months' wages to buy a color TV. And then have to save up for another 6 months in order to have enough money to buy a VCR. Yeah.
Wow.
It's crazy. It's an interesting story. So
Sounds
I'm enjoying
cool.
that a lot. Yeah.
You know what I still haven't finished watching yet?
What's Daredevil. That? Still?
No, I need
to. Oh, man. Hey, Civil War is opening. Well, it's already it's been open by the time
this airs. Seen it at this point.
By the time this airs, yeah. I will try and see it as early. Probably, I probably won't get to it or opening weekend, but I'll try and see it as early as I can, yeah.
Yeah. Just pick a night during the week and go, probably.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's cool. That's good. Yeah. I'm sure it's going to be good.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like I've seen the entire movie already. Mm-hmm. Because of the, all the clips they've released. Like,
I stopped watching them. After they did the Spider-Man announcement, I was like, all right, well, so I've seen Spider-Man, so that's okay. I'll stop watching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm really excited, though.
I know. So, I think you're more excited than I am.
Well, I'm sure. So they just did a thing on IO9 where they listed every single character who's been in the Marvel movies, like who's a superhero character, and where they were last seen. And when to expect to see them again. And that was really cool. Like to know like, oh, this person might be in this thing, but they're definitely in this thing, you know? So talking about the movies coming out that we'd heard about, one of the interesting things recently was, so Inhumans was pulled from the schedule.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
With no backup.
Does that mean S.H.I.E.L.D. is not doing well?
Well, it could mean that they feel like the property isn't going to make money and it's doing fine on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's a big plot line in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. right now. So why not just let them, you know,
let them own their thing?
Yeah, you know, so, yeah. So to me, the biggest, most interesting thing is going to be not up through Infinity War, because I'm sure that'll all be good. The Russo brothers who did
Winter Soldier
and are doing Civil War are the ones doing Infinity Wars parts 1 and 2.
Yep.
Did you know what the estimated budget on those two movies are combined? You want to take a guess?
$1 billion.
$1 billion. Yes. $500 million for each movie. You know why? Because the first one's gonna make like $3 billion.
Yeah.
So why not just, I mean, the marketing, the merchandising alone of that movie will make $1 billion.
Sure.
So why not just let them go crazy, you know?
Sure.
So, so I believe those would be really good. But what I really want to see is what's going to happen after that. So.
Yeah. I'm sure they have a plan because they're always looking 10 years out, right?
Right.
Yeah.
The other thing I'm wondering about a lot is, so they really do this schedule tightly, and Ant-Man and the Wasp comes out between parts 1 and part 2.
Oh, does it really?
So I'm like, whatever happens at the end of part 1 can't be that bad. Also, thinking about their other properties, like what will that do to, say, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? Because that's always very closely related. Like they're never mentioned in the movie, but they always do a very good job of tying themselves into the movie.
Yeah, sure.
And that kind of started with Winter Soldier, and they've been phenomenal at it ever since. But it kind of makes me wonder, like, what, you know, what they'll do.
Yeah, I don't know.
So,
I don't know. Yeah. I think I've seen them all now because I finally saw Thor of the Dark World.
Which wasn't bad, you know?
It's fine. And I saw Ant-Man. What else has come out since then?
Ant-Man was good. Ant-Man had no rights to be as good as it was.
Yeah, we've talked about that before.
Yeah, so good.
Has there been anything since Ant-Man?
No, Ant-Man was the last one.
Yeah, okay. That's what I thought.
So now Civil War, was Avengers Part 2 was before Ant-Man? Yeah, because Falcon is an Ant-Man. Right. Yeah, so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I guess I'm up to date on that stuff, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I'm getting a little burned out on Marvel movies.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm not. I'll just keep seeing them.
Yeah. Did you ever see Deadpool?
No, I really want to. It's out now. I can rent it. Oh, okay. So, yeah, I can rent it. So
it was good. It was worth your time.
Yeah, so And you're saying that, which means I'll probably love it because you went in not wanting to like
it. I kind of hate Deadpool as a character, but I still really enjoy the movie. Yeah. That said, I think the third time you watch that movie, it's not going to be nearly as fun because you will have seen all the jokes.
Right.
Yeah. And it just won't be as funny.
And they've already greenlit the second one. So that's exciting stuff. Right. So,
but.
I think that's a lot of pop culture we're talking about here.
Yeah, it's a lot of pop culture.
And I don't know if there's anything else pop culture-y to talk about.
Other nerd stuff. Gosh, this is good. I'm just going to keep mumbling.
Oh, I saw a set picture tweeted of the thing they built to be the first Jedi temple on Octo or Octu. I don't know how it's pronounced. I think it's Octo because Octu sounds like R2, so I'm guessing it's Octo. And it's cool because it very much fits right in with the Skellig Michael, like really well. Like, it was just a top-down shot of it, but it's cool. Okay. Well, so here's a question I had.
Sure. Star Wars time.
Yeah, Star Wars time. So people who know about Star Wars, and I know that the EU is no more, but I'm just curious. So when they built the first Jedi Temple, it looks like they built it out of, like, rocks and stuff, right?
Okay.
Did they have lightsabers back then? Like,
I don't know.
I'm just wondering, like, were they just using sticks? Was it like the Schwartz?
They were using the Force, Jason.
I mean, I know, but I'm curious. Like, were there Jedis before there were lightsabers? Probably. That makes sense.
I would think so.
Because since they made lightsabers, okay, that's a dumb question.
Technological advancement.
Right, but I'm just curious, like, how did that work? Mm-hmm. How were they, like, we're basically, like, space ninjas who have magic powers?
Well, remember that the prequels made them space ninjas, right?
Well, I guess, but they continue to be space ninjas in the new movie.
Not so much.
I don't know, man. Rey is going to be a space ninja. I think we all know that. And listen, if you haven't seen Star Wars and that's a spoiler, I'm sorry, but where have you been?
All the super ninja stuff was in the prequels. Okay. And so in the original trilogy and in Force Awakens, there was no ninja. There was good sword fighting, but there was no ninja crap. No flips and crap, you know?
There wasn't too much ninja crap in the prequels. There was a lot of kicking. There was a lot of
kicking and flipping and spinning, right? and acrobatics.
I've been watching Star Wars with my kid, right?
Yeah.
The third one was really dark for him because he's only four. But
like Return of the Jedi or
no? Revenge of the Sith.
Okay, so you do mean episode three? Okay.
I decided to just go in order. He doesn't know the difference.
He doesn't know the difference.
The first two were very kid friendly.
Yeah,
especially the first one.
Yeah.
But like the third one, he was kind of like he wasn't ever scared, but Sidious is a little scary when he like becomes Sidious and gets all gross.
It's a bit much.
But he did fine with it. But in the big fight between Anakin and Obi-Wan, which, by the way, watching it now, I remember when the first time I saw it and I was like, whoa, watching it now, it is hella boring. They're just basically hitting.
It goes on forever.
Yeah. And it's nothing that interesting. It's like, oh, now we're fighting on a different thing. Oh, now we're fighting on it. But there's no sense of danger because you know how the battle ends, right? You're like, okay, so
it's bad.
Obi-Wan's going to punk him out and then he's going to leave him because he's not going to die because he's going to be Darth Vader. Right. But like, they do a lot of kicking and stuff in that though, you know? So
a lot of acrobatics.
So one of the things I did notice about that film, especially, that was fantastic was Ewan McGregor is way better than that movie has any business of having him
true.
In, right?
True statement.
Like when he is like, has to like beat down Anakin and like cut his legs off and stuff. Like, he's like, it's real acting, right? Mm-hmm. It's some of the only real acting in those movies.
Yep.
He's
better than those films.
Yeah. Way better. So they've actually had talked about possibly doing like a bridge gap movie with Ewan McGregor.
Really?
Like set like an Obi-Wan standalone movie.
That'd be awesome.
Wouldn't that be fantastic?
I would love that. Between three and four?
Yeah. It sounded like he was interested in it because, I mean, he's like a chance to redeem like and do like a good Star Wars movie.
Yes. Oh, that'd be great. I would love to see that. I think that is a great idea. I hope that's a real thing.
Because there's a story to tell there, right?
Yeah.
Like he didn't just go dink around forever. Right. I hope not.
There's, 18 years of story to tell.
Yeah. I mean, I hope he went and did some stuff. Like you could see Luke as a little kid running around or something, like, you know what I mean? Like, and he's getting in some adventure. Maybe he's like warning off threats that are coming after Luke or something.
That'd be so cool. I'm down with that.
Yeah.
Make that happen.
Oh man. Yeah.
Things. Yeah. And I mean, they compare that with Darth Vader, you know, Darth Vader is new in his costume and he's wrecking crap, you know?
Right.
You know?
And who's to say, like, when they see each other in episode four, New Hope, do they make reference? Is that the first time they've seen each other since he was Darth Vader?
I think it is.
Okay.
I think it is. It's implied, at least.
Right.
But, I mean, it wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't necessarily have to be on the screen together, but it could be, you know, Darth Vader is searching for Luke and Obi-Wan is defending against Vader's minions. I don't know, whatever.
Right.
You know, there are a lot of options there.
Yeah.
A lot of options there.
Anyways, so there's a Star Wars movie I want to see. Mm-hmm. So
I would like to see that too.
Yeah.
I'm jazzed about Rogue One. I think it's great.
It looks good.
I'm jazzed about that. I am more interested. I think we talked about this before though. I'm more interested in that than, you know, a Boba Fett movie, you know.
Yeah.
Give me new characters. I would love to see new characters.
Yeah.
I don't want a young Han Solo movie. I don't care about young Han Solo. I don't care.
I'll watch it. I mean,
I will too, but it doesn't interest me the way I would like to see stories about new characters.
Yeah.
The exception being Obi-Wan during that transition stuff, because I feel like Ewan never got the chance to really own that character the way he should.
Oh man. And oh yeah, it'd be great. And it's great because he's aged now, you know, 16 years since it's happened. Yep. Gray him up a little bit.
Yep.
And he looks a heck of a lot like Alec Guinness. So he sounds just like him. Mm-hmm. So it's, it would be really cool.
That'd be great.
So
anyways,
sweet. So let's talk about games. Okay. All right. So games.
Topic tonight is
we've got this list of topics you go through, and we picked this one together, which
can
is...
Can we make player elimination not suck?
Yeah. Well, the topic to take the positive is, can we make player elimination awesome?
Sure.
So, ahead of time, I'm going to say I don't think we can, but let's give it a go.
Okay. So I think we need to start by defining player elimination. So the strictest definition of player elimination is that a player is out of the game and cannot play anymore.
Correct?
Okay. So I think by that definition, the only way you make that a positive experience is if you make a game that sucks to play. Okay. And that's not a game that we want to make.
Well, okay. So I think there's a simple solution, but it doesn't work for every game.
Okay.
So, but I'm going to say it because it's a simple solution, and that is make a short game. Because if it's a 10-minute or less game, as long as you can't get knocked out on turn one, I think player elimination's okay.
Sure. Yeah.
That was one of the things I was going for when I made Water Balloon Washout, which has player elimination, is that it ends quickly enough that nobody gets upset about it.
Sure.
Because, which is not always the case. I mean, still sometimes, admittedly, that game can go on for a while if you get two players and they get kind of stalemated out.
Mm-hmm. But most of the time, it's not a problem.
Yeah, most of the time, it's not a problem. But, I mean, you know, with any game with play elimination, there's a chance that game could drag on. You get people who take too much time. I mean, really, the only time I've ever seen that happen is with new players who are overthinking stuff. Because, if a group of us played it, we would never be... The game would never take more than 10, 15 minutes, guaranteed. Sure. Because we'll just play it hard.
Right.
So put it away wet.
So that is a situation where player elimination is maybe doesn't suck. But we want to make it awesome.
Yeah. Make it awesome.
So to try and make it awesome, I think we need to adjust that definition of player elimination a little bit. And here's what I propose. So player elimination, in my preferred definition, is when a player can no longer win the game.
I guess. I mean, that's... Right. So they can still be part of the experience, but not win the game. But
they can still have influence on the people who are still in the game.
Before we go on that, though, let me do one thing here.
Sure.
And that is... Because you're talking about what if the game really sucked, so you wanted to be done with it.
Yeah.
What if there was an opposite? A racing game could be a player elimination game.
First one across.
Where the first one wins, and then you're vying for not to get last place, right? Mm-hmm. So if that's the case...
For second winner and third winner?
Yes. This is a great time for second winner, third winner, fourth winner, 12th winner, whatever. Supper, dinner. 11 Z's. But anyways, so what I'm thinking here is if it's a racing game, right? So then you get eliminated, but you won. So that's awesome, right? Because then the whole time you're just gloating like, hey, who's going to be in second place, losers?
Well, but game, when you're playing a game, you want to win. And then if you don't win, then you don't win. You're not the winner, you know? And when there's no prize money involved, no one gives a crap about second or third place.
Okay, so... What if it was a racing game played in multiple rounds?
Well, so you could do it that way. That sure, multiple laps.
Ooh, here's an idea.
Mm-hmm. It's terrible. Shut up.
Here's a way to make player elimination even worse.
Okay.
Player elimination in a legacy game.
So you're just not invited over anymore.
So like we're playing Risk Legacy. Day one, Rob's armies get eliminated.
Yeah.
Hey, Rob, there's six more sessions left. You're not invited.
Yeah.
Sorry about your luck,
I mean,
bro.
Can come over and hang out and drink a beer and watch if you want.
But don't talk. Just sit there. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't. No.
You're
input.
Dead.
Yeah. Yeah. That is so. That's terrible.
So let's do your redefinition thing. Sure.
Yeah. So maybe in this idea, you're out of the game. You can't win anymore, but you can still get back in there and mess with everybody else.
But then are you just king making?
Well, I think what you're doing is you're trying to target whoever looks to be the king and trying to punish them. I think that's the idea. So going back to Maelstrom, right? Maelstrom was a player elimination game that I had.
I guess I've only ever played it with two players, really. But yeah, like, it's a two player game, right?
Yeah. So it was best with four, honestly. So you got your four players, you're swirling around there, and at some point somebody's going to die, somebody's get knocked out, and I was trying to figure out some way to do a ghost ship. So after you're out of the game, you can't win anymore. You cannot escape the Maelstrom. You're dead. Your ship has sunk. But maybe you can come back as a ghost ship and just mess with people.
Go for the prison who killed you.
Yeah, right. Get revenge, something like that.
Right.
And I never figured that out. But that's an example of the kind of thing that I think could make a player elimination game still be fun for the people who technically got eliminated and cannot win anymore.
So that makes me think of a game where in the game you get points for assassinating people, but I hate to make it just about, because it needs to be kind of goofy, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a Beetlejuice, like this is the Beetlejuice license game, right?
Okay.
So in the game, when I kill someone else, when I remove them from the game, or as we say with my son, when I stop them, as we say.
Sure, yeah.
Did he get stopped? He got stopped. Buddy. That made me kids aren't walking around saying kill all the time. Yeah. You know, the idea is that anybody that I kill in the game, they're out, right?
Mm-hmm.
But now they come back and they're attached to me, haunting me.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So I got points for taking them out, but now their sole purpose in the game is to detract from me, to make it so maybe they're
harder for you to win.
Yeah. So boom, deck of cards they get, right?
Sure.
So like, it's a risk reward scenario, right? Where mm-hmm. like I can take out more people, and this might be a game where it would be fun as like a party game
mm-hmm.
with like five plus people, right?
Sure.
Oh gosh, picture this like a werewolf style game, right?
Okay.
Where if you are the leader who votes somebody out, mm-hmm. and now that person is like nagging you, right? Or has some way to ruin your life for the rest of the game, like hella annoying, right?
Sure.
I love that idea.
Okay.
So like, I'm a player, and you can do those double-sided cards, right? Like I have a deck of cards that allows me to take actions, right? If I take someone out, mm-hmm. they flip their deck of cards over to the spirit side, and now I'm their target, and they're going to do everything they can to screw me over.
So
being the first person to get a kill, bad, right? Okay. Because that's longer you're going to be getting harassed.
So is there a button shy wallet game in this? Is there a pretense version that's Ghostbusters or Ghost Hunters, and you need to figure out who in the group is, or it's probably not that, but you can take out your opponents as you play the game, and then when you take them out, so they can't win anymore, but they're in the game still as a ghost.
So you could do that with each player has. So it's more fun if it's more players. So you've got 18 cards to work with. So mm-hmm. six player game, three cards each.
Okay.
Cards are double sided.
Mm-hmm.
One side is a live side. One side is dead side. In fact, you could even actually, if you wanted the cards not to be double sided, you could just have the splitsies, right? Where it's like top half is this, upside down, the bottom is this. You just turn it. So that way the card backs are all the same. And then you could actually do a game like three card Monty style. Where you know what three card Monty is, right?
Yeah, explain it for listeners though.
So three card Monty is, I take three cards, I shuffle them, and I put them face down, and you're trying to find the ace or whatever. Yeah. I think that's how three card Monty works.
Basically, right.
That's how it works in every
where that is. Yeah.
Hollywood movie, and it's a trick, right? Most of the time they're screwing with you. Yeah.
Right.
So.
So you're trying to make somebody pick the wrong card?
No, I'm just thinking of, you have three cards in front of you and somehow you're flipping them to do something. So, Ooh, what if the, I don't know what the three cards are, but what if at any given time having them up is her, you know what? Nope. Yeah. So let's go with this.
Okay.
So if I'm on the alive side, right? I've got the cards. I've got some cards here. I've got them in front of me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the cards are broken up with lines or something, right?
Okay.
So the way that I line the cards up tells me at the end what action is happening, right? So by making pathways, does that make sense? So picture there are lines across here, right? And the lines have different colors, and I need to match the lines up So like there might be a blue line here and a blue line here, but there's also like a blue line here and a blue line here, right? So there's two different blue line powers, right?
So your cards, to describe this for the builders, so the cards have, what, three or four horizontal lines going across them each?
Or even more.
Or even more in different colors. And the colors, they're not always in the same order of colors.
Right.
Not all being all the same colors there every time.
Right. So okay. By me shuffling them, and yeah, that would determine how things were happening.
I'm not sure where you're going with that.
Because then you could have a scale on the center card for how far it was pushed up, right? Which would tell you how powerful it was. Oh, I think there's something with that, actually.
I'm not sure.
I don't know what, but it could be like a repeating pattern, and you can only shift it so far on any turn. Yeah, there's something there. But anyway, so okay. The idea being that like when you're out, you have to flip them over, and now you can no longer win, but now you have different ghostly like powers. And maybe those two games are maybe that game I'm just talking about is not the game to fit that, but I think that is a way to solve the problem is you can't win, but it doesn't allow you to be a kingmaker, right? It gives you a new target. Your new goal is to
take out the guy.
That's how you get satisfaction, right? You're not going to win. But you are satisfied as a spirit and released if you can make sure the guy who knocked you out doesn't win. Mm-hmm. So that could be all right. Like that could be fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, that could be.
Not sure how to come at that though. I'm sorry. I don't understand your horizontal line concept. But
that's all right.
Yeah.
Think of it as one of those games where you're trying to flow stuff the sludge through the pipes, right?
Yeah.
And you're sliding it to make connections, to move the pipes, that sort of thing.
Okay.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It's all right. You don't have to understand it. You suck.
Okay. This is where we think in silence.
And some listeners don't like that. Yeah. That's all right. Yeah. You don't have to like that.
Right.
We're still going to do it. What if... Nope. One of the games I was trying to do for that contest was something to do with a bridge, where all 18 cards together made a bridge, and you could shift cards around to adjust the track, but you don't get tokens, right? Because Jason Tegmeyer is a jerk. Mm-hmm. But then he says, oh, we're going to put some games out with some tokens. And I was like, oh, you mother. So anyways, that actually makes me think that game could work, right? So you've got all your 18 cards laid out in a row and making like a big bridge, right? Or a track or whatever. And players own certain cards, right? Mm-hmm. And something good happens when people land on your stuff, right? When you force people to land on your stuff.
Okay.
And shifting cards matters. And the opposite side is the ghost side. So it could be a train. It could be like the train and like a ghost train.
Ghost train.
Chugga chugga choo choo.
All right. I'm okay with a ghost train. So maybe every round one of the there's some dark spirit that's advancing on the train from behind. And every round the farthest back train car flips to the ghost train side. And if your token is still on that train car, that means you become a ghost.
Right.
And now your goal is to try and pull people back so that they also become a ghost.
Sure.
So you start out trying to move forward, and after you fail, then you're trying to pull people back.
So the cool thing about that is the ghosts win if they get everybody to turn into a ghost.
Right, but then everyone's a ghost and everyone wins.
Except for the last person that got turned into a ghost, then I think that they lose.
They lose.
Screw that guy.
Sucks to be that guy.
Well, actually, no. Once it got to one person like left and that was the winner. So basically, here's how it works. You say, well, but see, people are going to screw with it. But if people were good, what I was going to say was the winner is the first person to get to the end of the track unless there's only one player left and then the ghosts win. But then if I'm in last place... And if I'm in, if there's two of us and you're about to win, why not just let the ghosts overtake me so that we say screw you and we win?
I think it's the other way around. So I think you're all at the front of the train, you're all in the engine, and you want to get back to the caboose and then uncouple it so you can escape from the evil dark ghost vortex.
Oh, or it's going to go off the tracks.
Or it's going to go off the tracks.
Like, you know, Back to the Future's out.
Yeah. You want so I think you want to, you're working your way to the back and starting with the engine flips over to ghost train side or crash side or whatever. And you want to not just make it to the caboose, but you need to be able to do some kind of action in there to decouple it before it turns into ghost caboose. And you, and any players on the caboose, when they decouple it, they all win. But if you, if no one's on it, then the ghosts win.
Okay. So back on topic here, what we figured out is the way to make player elimination awesome is to develop a way where players who are eliminated have a new goal that doesn't allow them to win, but allows them to get some joy out of hosing someone else.
Yeah. So it's the revenge.
But you have to give them a target because otherwise they're just going to king make. So
exactly right.
Giving them a mission and a target will, you know.
Right. Yeah, that's right. That's absolutely right. So if they're eliminated from the game, they need to have some way to still influence the outcome of the people who are not out, but you need to assign them a specific target so that
or
they
task
have
to complete
or task,
or
right,
yeah.
So that they have a goal. Right. And I think that if that's handled well, that could be actually a pretty satisfying experience. That's worth continuing to think about.
I like it.
Yeah. Cool. You need to pitch a game. You laid some cards out here on the table.
I did. So I laid some cards out here on the table to construct a Venus flytrap. So that is the game I'm going to pitch, is Venus flytrap.
Venus flytrap. This is your first entry for the button shot.
Yes, it is. So, okay. So I'm just going to talk a little about my process. This is a super simple game. Sure. It'll take like 5 minutes to do. So the process I followed was I wanted to design a game that built something in the center, that's something that did something. And I was trying to think of something weird and... I actually don't know how it came to me, but I was like, Venus Flytrap. So I wanted to...
Like Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah, basically it's Audrey 2 from Little Shop of Horrors. So what I did was I took 4 cards and put them in the center and made those 4 cards the Venus Flytrap. And then I added 4 more cards on top of that to be the kind of the arms or the tendrils reaching out.
They kind of arrange in a plus shape.
Yep.
With the mouth of the monster in the center. And you have those 4 cards that can slide in and out.
Right. Right. And so what we've got is of the four cards that stick out on the bottom all have numbers on them, 1 through 5. And that's how much damage that arm is going to do if it hits you, or that tendril is the word I've been trying to use. And their tendrils are labeled forward, backward, right, and left. And that becomes important later in the game. And each turn... by default, the flytrap is going to grow by 1 on every tendril. So if they're all at 1 on turn 2, they're all on 2. They can never go below 1. But throughout the game, you'll be able to do things to affect them and make them smaller or bigger. In a 4-player game, everyone starts with 10 hit points. And that works pretty cool. Now, instead of being winner take all, because player elimination sucks, as we're talking about tonight, right. It's an appropriate topic for tonight. It's the first person to get to 0 hit points gets eaten and everybody else gets away.
Yeah.
Now you can be a jerk about it because it's at the end of the turn. So if you get down to like 0 hit points and my wife is playing with us and she's at 1, I could do something to kill her so that you both lose and I win.
Yeah.
So just to spite people basically.
Which is, you know, a good strategy. I would be supportive of that decision.
To be fair, she would expect that from me. So, right. And that's exactly what I would do to her.
Yeah.
So anyways, so that's that. So there's also 10 other cards. And as I say in my video, because 8 cards are completely wasted, making a Venus flytrap in the center of the table, the other 10 cards all each have 2 powers. So those cards are items that you might get. And I'm going to read through them because there's only 10. Is that cool? Mm-hmm. So there is... So what these do are... These have instructions on them. It's got a player power, which might be something like all tendrils shrink or one tendril shrinks or pick one. And then the plant power, which means if you were to give this card to the plant, this is what the plant is going to do with it, right?
Yep.
So the way that works is at the beginning of the turn, everybody gets 2 cards except for the plant gets 1 all face down and player number 1 for that turn gets 3 cards. Player number 1 then looks at his 3 cards, picks 1 of them and puts it face down on top of the other card by the plant, right? All other players look at their cards and then pass 1 to the left. Okay, everybody still has two cards. Then from player one on,
So player one gives a card to the plant and to the player on his left.
Which is why they get three cards. Basically, it was an extra card.
That's fine.
And I was like, oh, it'd be cool if player one got to choose what the plant was going to do. Yeah. So that's what happens. So we all pass a card. Player one plays a card, takes the action. Player two plays a card. Player three plays a card. Player four, plant plays a card. And then we rinse and repeat one more time. And then the round's over. If everybody's still alive, we move on. So the cards are pesticide. All tendrils shrink by one if a player uses it. And plant powers attack everyone because pesticide ticks them off.
Sure.
Hedge trimmers. The tendril facing you shrinks by one. Plant powers attack right. Tendrils is the first word in here. Pruning shears. The tendril facing you shrinks by one and attack left. Plant food. The tendril in front of you grows by one. Choose another tendril to also grow by one. So this is a good card where if someone passes it to you, you can hose them back.
Yep.
Plant powers grow all because it's plant food. Oh, and then there's some bad cards. Glass vase. If you're attacked, take one more damage this turn because you're holding a vase. And the plant powers simply attack backwards. Energy drink. Heal one damage.
Ooh.
Plant power, grow all, because we know that energy drinks. If there's anything I learned from Idiocracy, it's that energy drinks are good to put on plants.
Right, Brondo. It's what plant it's what plants crave.
It is.
Yeah.
Fire axe.
Ooh.
The tendril facing you shrinks by two.
Ouch. Whoa.
The two tendrils adjacent to you shrink by one.
Wow.
Plant power is attack all.
Attack all.
Oh, this is my single favorite card. Bouquet of Roses. You are attacked by the Venus flytrap. It just is a sucky card.
Yeah.
And if you give it to the Venus flytrap, it grows left and right. Fire extinguisher, the tendril facing you shrinks by one, and the tendril opposite of you also shrinks by one. Plant powers attack forward. And the last one is watering can. Pick a tendril, and it grows by one, and plant powers grow in front and back.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the game.
Mm-hmm.
You and I played it. When we tried it, it stunk because we didn't have enough hit points. So in a two-player game, you probably need 20 hit points each. You just keep track of that on pen and paper.
Yep.
But that's how simple the game is. But I think it's a fun experience. I think it's a nice way to hose everybody, right?
Yeah. I would like to try it with four sometime.
Yeah. We should do that. So I'm pretty excited about it with the contest. I think that I'm not saying it's going to win. It probably won't win. But I know that it is. So the process I went through was I wanted a game that I thought Jason Tagmeier would like. He likes stuff that's a little weird, a little different.
Sure.
And I knew that he would think it was gutsy if I wasted eight cards building something. So I did that. And that got his attention. So like we were just talking about it. And he's like, I'm really intrigued that you did that. And that the rest of the game is fun with only 10 cards.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool.
Yeah.
I'm interested to hear his good feedback on that after he tries it. Assuming he tries it. He may not. So that was kind of what I was going for. I wanted a theme that was a little off base.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, making it like a little fighting game was kind of different, you know, like a, you know, we're all fighting something. And with the four tendrils, it's perfect because each person stands. Now I should note that in a two player game, you would turn it diagonally.
Mm-hmm.
And so like I would have backward and left and you would have forward and right.
Sure.
And whenever something says the tendril adjacent, it means that's not yours.
Yeah.
So I could pick one. So if I picked to shrink the right one, the adjacent one would then be the backwards one, because I can't get a double benefit from it. The idea is that I'm helping you while I'm helping me.
Yeah.
So I may not want to do something because I don't want to keep you alive. I'm trying to, because really the goal is you're trying to kill another player first, right?
Yeah, of course.
Players are not allowed to strategize with each other either during the game, because that would just lead to people hosing. Like, I don't want people to gang up on one person, so it's, you can't talk about the cards you're playing.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah. It's good. It was fun. Yeah. Like I said, I want to play it with four and see how that shakes out.
Yeah, much better experience that way. So
yeah.
Cool. That's it. That's the game.
All right, man. Great. Do we have any final questions?
I don't think we have any more Twitter questions. I think we're tapped out of those.
Those popped in.
So reminder that our contest for making a football game is due on June 6th.
Yeah, go through those rules again, please.
So the rules are you must design a football-based game, like Rob and I failed to do, with dice only. You can have pen and paper for scoring if you like, but you don't have to. It's due by June 6th. The winner will be, if you're going to Gen Con, will be allowed to be a judge in the 2016 Iron Design Contest, a contest where the contestants have still not yet been picked. Neither is a head judge. We've got some work to do.
Yeah.
But that's all right. We will get there. We got time. And I'm not worried about it. So there's that.
And again, remember that the inspiration for this is to make a game that we could pull out, a gamer's game that we can pull out in a sports bar and not be embarrassed to play.
Not get beat up.
Yeah.
And if you're not going to Gen Con, that is fine. We'll pick somebody else to get the judging. But you will win some sweet prizes that we haven't decided on yet, but we promise we'll make it worth your while. It'll be cool. Mm-hmm. And we'll send those to you directly from us. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's the contest.
There you go.
So June 6th, do it up. We already have a few entries, which is promising. Yeah, I'd like to see some more. And we have a few entries from people who I've not seen enter contests before, which makes me really happy.
I love that.
So please send some more. And yeah.
Cool. All right. Then that's all she wrote for tonight. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We appreciate it. As always, if you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at podcastbtg. Jason is at J.A. Slingerland, and I'm at poorly_designed. You can like us on Facebook, give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and where all good podcasts are found, we're there. Call our Google Voice number at 770-TEL-BTG. Hey, don't forget to buy our games. Go to buildinggamepodcast.com. Through there, you can find a copy of Waterloo and Washout for your very own. You can also get links to Finish It, the outrageous storytelling party game, and the Rumplebum Academy for bug-based baking, which are available in the Game Crafter.
And someday, maybe our CCG.
Someday,
Rob ever puts it out there.
When I have,
I keep forgetting to remind you when it actually is doable.
Yeah. So someday that'll be out there.
Someday.
Come see us at Origins. We're going to be at Origins on Friday and Saturday at Origins. That's in June. That's the end of June, right?
End of June.
So we'll be there. We're looking forward to that. And that is probably enough for tonight. So thanks, everybody. Good night.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
Episode 207. That's the episode. It's 207.
It's 207.
What is it? It's 207. As 207s go, this is the 207est.
Of the 207s.
Don't even get me started on the 208s.
208s will be crappy, probably.
We'll see. Well, almost certainly.